Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves. And you guys, this is going to be a super, super fascinating conversation. A very special guest today, Rebecca Norton Childs, is the operator of Pup Starts, which is a literal college for dog breeding in the UK. And I encountered her through friends of friends, and I said, oh my God, we need to talk. So Rebecca, thank you. I'm super excited that you came to join us today.
Absolutely. Listen, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
All right, crew. You don't just raise puppies, you raise champions. Every pairing, every decision, every early milestone matters. And that's why Trupanion created its free breeder support program designed for responsible breeders like you to help protect your litters from the moment they go to their new homes. When you join, you'll unlock access to Trupanion's exclusive Go Home Day offer, a simple, seamless way to send your puppies home with immediate pet medical insurance coverage. No waiting periods, no worries, just instant protection from day one. As a member of Trupanion's Breeder Support Program, you'll also gain access to free resources, including litter health insights to support your program, veterinarian-approved social media content, and pet parent education, all so you can focus on what you do best, raising healthy, happy pets. Protect your litter's future and give your buyers peace of mind. Join Trupanion's free breeder support program today at trupanion.com/puredogtalk. This is new, you guys, so make sure you get this one. trupanion.com/puredogtalk. Trupanion is underwritten in Canada by Accelerant Insurance Company of Canada, or GPIC Insurance Company, and in the United States by American Pet Insurance Company, or ZPIC Insurance Company. You are doing a thing that I think a lot of us have sort of aspired to and not fully implemented. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, is share with people what Pup Starts is and really why you did it, because it's a fascinating story.
Okay, so first of all, I need to give you a little bit of a background in sort of UK education, because we are fundamentally a training provider, okay, in the UK, and we deliver nationally accredited qualifications to the dog breeding sector, pet professionals as well, but predominantly to the dog breeding sector. And we also offer a range of what we call continual professional development courses, CPD. Yes. The nationally accredited stuff is the equivalent to, in the UK, A-levels, which I think is your college level education. Yeah. It's after high school, but before university. Yeah, for us, it's that kind of 16 to 18. And they've broken it down now and they've given the qualifications levels. So we teach level 2, which would be high school, and we teach level 3, which would be the A-level, you know, the college piece. And why do we do it? Oh, my goodness. Okay, how long have we got on this podcast? Oh, my goodness.
We've got time, man. We've got time. When you look through your website, you talk about your work in like animal control, like what we would have in the U.S. is animal control. And Absolutely. How that brought you to where you are instead of to the opposite end of the spectrum, the adopt, don't shop, oh, my God, you know, hair on fire.
So I left school and I did some work experience at a place called Battersea Dogs Home, which I think probably most people have heard of, even if you're in the US. It's a big rescue centre in London that take dogs in from all of the local authorities and, you know, any dogs that are in need, stray dogs, unwanted dogs, and they rehome them in London and, you know, through various different charity outlets outside of London, according to the breed and the needs of the dog. And when I was there, I saw some really horrible stuff. You know, I'm not going to lie. Not because Battersea Dogs Home wasn't being run proper, just because the stories that are, you know, the dogs that are there just breaks your heart. You know, being in that rescue environment, it's very, very difficult. If you really are a true animal lover, it's quite hard to see and to be around a situation that you just don't seem to be able to change. It just seems to be a continual flow of unwanted dogs that are a bit broken and a bit difficult to find the right home for, and possibly unhealthy, either physically or behaviourally. Oh, and it's just, you know, it is soul destroying. And so I cut my teeth there, did a bit of work experience there. And then I set up a pet care company, and I did a lot of animal care, small animals, cats, dogs, horses, chickens, rabbits, that kind of thing, a lot of dog walking. And I was contracted out by the London Borough of Waltham Forest, which is like a catchment area within Greater London, to run their animal warden service while their animal warden went off on maternity leave. And she was actually gone for a fair amount of time. So I ended up being there for longer than I'd intended to be in the first instance. And again, you know, sort of fortifying what I had learned and sort of discovered during that period. I'm now the person taking the dogs to the pounds instead of being in the pound working, yeah? And again, just that constant flow, you know, you can't stop it. It doesn't matter what you do. At that point, when I was there, microchipping had started to be introduced. We were microchipping animals. It wasn't compulsory. We were microchipping animals for free for people to try to stop the stray issue. We were neutering cats. We were dealing with stray dogs. We were taking animals in that people didn't want. And we would have them in the kennel for, they had 7 days. And if at the end of those 7 days that somebody didn't come forward for them, or I couldn't find a space for them in a charity or rehome them through the local authority myself, those animals were put to sleep. And there's only so many times you can do that before it starts affecting you mentally.
Yeah.
And obviously we're talking about a situation that was a while ago now, you know, possibly 25 odd years ago, maybe more.
We don't know what you're talking about. I'm pretty sure that you're just a fresh Dewey youth right now.
Oh, I wish. But yeah, it was a while ago. And those problems that we were seeing then, we still see now. We still see those same problems now, that constant flow of dogs coming into rescue. The thing that's changed, I think, for people that are working within that industry is we have a conversation now about mental health that we didn't have before. We recognise that stress in the workplace plays a massive part in our well-being and, you know, how we are. And I became ineffective at my job because I couldn't hack it. Couldn't be that person that would take those dogs on a Friday. I used to dread Fridays. I'd felt like I'd failed them if I couldn't find somewhere for them and I couldn't find a home for them. And they were, you know, not easy animals to find homes for. We're talking about working breeds in central London that had issues that you can't find homes for all of them, certainly not within that time frame. And I felt like I'd failed these dogs. And oh, it was just awful. I'd look at these dogs and I'd be like, I know what's going to happen to you this afternoon and I can't stop that from happening. And, you know, my house was full of dogs. I turned into that person. Take them all home.
I think the thing that is so amazing about your story and your journey is, I mean, I worked in an animal shelter when I was in college. I know those people. And the fact that you took that and moved it in a positive direction. Instead of saying, don't ever breed dogs, all you horrible, awful, no good, right?
No,
you went to breed good dogs. That's a transition that not everyone can make.
But that's where we need to be at, because the fact of the matter is that people want dogs. People want companion dogs now more than ever, and they're not working breeds so much anymore, more companion orientated, isn't it? But the fact of the matter is people want dogs in their life more now than ever. And what we need are responsible, ethical dog breeders. That's what we need.
And
we
more need of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to get that message out to the public and to the breeding world, although the breeding world probably already know quite a bit about that part of it already. But I feel that that conversation starts with the breeders, and that is where the kind of piece came in. So I left the job because I couldn't hack it. And at that time, my personal life was developing and changing, and I had a young child and a second on the way, and I didn't want to raise my children in an urban environment, and we moved to rural Shropshire in the UK. And I decided that what I was actually going to do was put my experience and test it out. I'm going to breed my own dogs, you know, it's what we're going to do. We're going to breed our own dogs. I wasn't in a space where being able to offer continual rescue spaces to dogs was possible. I had two young children. Was massively responsible to be taking that kind of responsibility on. And so I decided that what I was going to do is that I was going to breed. And that is really, in essence, how my breeding journey started, because what I wanted to do was breed healthy, balanced, environmentally sound puppies for people in today's modern world, okay, so that these puppies could go and live in an urban environment or a rural environment, or be a pet for somebody, or be a part-time working animal for somebody, or, you know, whatever that needed to look like. Very, very interested in the behaviour and the socialisation aspect of it, having seen the damage
right
on the other side.
When they don't get that in the whelping box, you know, with the breeder. Yeah, I mean, it's just disastrous.
Absolutely. And I started to think to myself, do you know what? I'm going to learn about this breeding thing like this. I'm going to learn about it. And then I thought, oh, where am I going to learn about it? Because there isn't anywhere to learn, and nobody wants to talk to me about it, because it's a bit of an au-fait subject. And actually, there are people who are already breeding who don't want to share their knowledge with you for whatever reason. And there was like one book, The Book of the Bitch. That was it. That was where you learn. And if you struck lucky, you had a vet that would talk to you about breeding, but you might have a vet that hates all dog breeders, and so, you know, not going to be able to learn from there. And Google was a thing, but like not like it is now, you know. The internet had only just started really back then. So, yeah, where do you learn? So you learn by mating your bitch and muddling along. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great, isn't it?
Right.
When she has 10 puppies and you're muddling along, getting it a bit wrong along the way. Not what you want to be doing. We all know those formative weeks, the breeding choices that we make in terms of health and behaviour and COI and all the stuff that we now know about and we preach about. If you're having a little stab in the dark because you don't really know what you're doing, you're going to make some pretty serious mistakes before you make some good choices, you know, and it shouldn't be that you learn as you go, because you're messing around with dogs' lives when you do that. It's not cool. So fast forward a bit, and you know, I do breed some litters, and I do get some knowledge, and I do have a great vet, and I do meet some people in the breeding world who are happy to mentor and share their experience, and the internet kicks in a bit more, and then COVID hits. Mm-hmm. Right,
and the world goes
crazy. It's like nuts. Everybody in the UK decides, you know, we can't go out, so the thing to do is get a job.
Honey.
Oh, right, okay. So yeah, so you were sharing the love too. So you know, everybody decided to get a dog, and I really struggled with the kind of the worry, I guess, of what was going to be. And I'd already started to create some educational stuff, particularly for my owners. Yeah. And I thought this needs to go one step further.
This
needs to be that breeders need to learn and have the opportunity to grow and develop and not be judged, you know, to go somewhere where they're free to learn, ask questions, whatever it is, whether you're crossbreeding, whether you're pure breeding, whether you're breeding for show, work, pet, whatever it is, we all come at it from a place of love for the dog. So let's share our knowledge and our experience, create a space where people can be educated, illuminated, you know, whatever label you want to put on it, but a place where we can learn about dogs and learn about dog breeding and all of the different elements to it, because there's millions of them. And I approached a awarding organisation in the UK called iPet Network, and between us we developed a qualification which was the first nationally accredited qualification for dog breeders, which was launched, in 2022. So 4 years. It'll be 4 years this January. Yeah. And yeah, we've not looked back from there, really. We've developed more qualifications since. So there's that was a certificate. We've now got a diploma as well. Mm-hmm. And then there's lots of other qualifications that have come along on the back of it. The most recently released is a level 2 award in behaviour for breeders, because, you know, behaviour for breeders is a very specific lens of what we can do and the impact of. So yeah, that's how Pup Starts has started. And you have to take a leap of faith when you're putting your information out there as a nationally accredited qualification, because it means other people are going to teach it.
Yes.
Yeah? And other people are essentially going to make money out of your business idea and about out of your motivation and out of your inspiration. And that can take a little bit of getting your head round. But you know what? I didn't invent dog breeding.
Yep.
Dogs did that. So, you know, all I did was package it up and put it in a few PDFs, really, you know, and made it accessible for people, right, so that dogs can have an easier ride of it and so that people are not doing it, you know, trial and error.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, you guys, the next generation of specialized ProPlan nutrition is here. ProPlan Advant Edge is a new line of powerful triple action formulas backed by years of research to deliver life-changing support for digestive health or healthy aging. These breakthrough formulations target the nutritional needs of adult dogs and include formulas for small breed and large breed adults. The first ProPlan line to harness three powerful biotics in one: ProPlan Advant Edge Digestive Support Plus Salmon and Oatmeal Formula draws on decades of microbiome research. Its prebiotic fiber promotes beneficial bacteria in the gut. Probiotics help maintain microbiome balance and promote resilience during naturally occurring stress. And postbiotics support gut health and ideal stool quality. Now, ProPlan Advant Edge Senior Support Plus Chicken and Rice Formula offers 3-in-1 support for cognition, immune health, and mobility for dogs age 7 and up. Cognitive health is derived from BrightMind technology, shown to promote memory, attention, and trainability. Immune health is from a specialized blend clinically proven to increase immune response, and mobility and joint health come from glucosamine and EPA. Do you want to know more about how to give your dog the advantage, life-changing nutrition for digestive health or healthy aging? Visit purina.com/proplan/products/dogfood to learn more. I'm really curious because, I mean, UK is a lot different than the US in a lot of ways, clearly, but there are so many, the government regulation piece. Is this something that you have found then your breeders who have, hi, I've got a diploma. Has that made any difference in the regulation aspect of it?
Yeah. So in terms of regulation, we have a government department called DEFRA, and they lay down the guidance for dog breeding activities in the UK. And there are some things that you have to adhere to decide whether you are in scope or out of scope, therefore needing a license or not needing a license. So how much money do you earn? How many dogs have you got? Do you run it in the course of business, et cetera? How many litters do you have, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah.
You know, we've got this kind of framework. And if you meet that framework, then you do need a license. And one of the points of the license is, and this is a very quick and dirty version because it is a very complicated process, but one of the points of the license is that they want you to have a level 2 or a level 3 qualification relevant to the licensing activities that you are undertaking. So as we move forward, and actually our government have just released a new animal welfare strategy, and the government are going to consult on it, and it is going to have an impact on dog breeding regulations in the UK. And I believe that a big part of that is going to be compulsory education or mandatory education moving forward, which I welcome. And I think if you look at what Germany are doing at the moment, if you look at what Switzerland are doing at the moment, you know, you have to do a course and a test prior to dog ownership. I mean, it's not specific for breeders, but, you know, along the same vein,
we are own a dog.
Uh-huh. We are talking about people taking responsibility, having to take true responsibility for the living, breathing creature that they are going to be a guardian of. And I think that's absolutely right. You shouldn't be able to just go out and buy a dog or just go and breed a litter of puppies when you have no clue and have never done it before. That shouldn't be a thing. We shouldn't be encouraging that kind of way of being.
Mm. Wow, that's wild. And talk us through some of, I mean, I can do it, but I'd rather you did it. Talk us through some of the, like, most popular, like, what are people learning? You've got basic reproduction, you've got basic whelping, some of the behavior pieces I thought are really interesting, and sort of how are you hearing from people that they are finding it useful or,
oh, you know, with that, they have
for 50 years, I don't need you, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. Okay, so you have people that come and do the qualification because they have to for licensing purposes, not because they want to spend their money on a qualification, especially not if they've been breeding for 20 or 30 years. What are you going to tell me that I don't already know? What I tend to find with those people, they'll be very experienced with the whelping side of things and the actual repro side of things, although they may be a little, couch my words carefully because I don't want to offend anybody, but they may not be using the most modern practices.
For sure, yeah.
They learn a lot around the socialization piece, okay, and around the matching people with puppies and around taking ownership of that and being bold enough to say to somebody, I'm really sorry, but that puppy is not the right puppy for you. You can't have that puppy, but you can have this one. They grow into that space and they're like, wow, early neurological stimulation. Can you just say that again and put it down? You know, and that's great. You know, that is absolutely brilliant. And they learn, you know, things that they probably haven't, you know, teta testing, for example, or epigenetics and, you know, conversations about topics that they wouldn't have come across potentially, things that have developed. Yeah. And certainly the behavioral piece, because we know more now about dog behavior than we ever have done. I think we can all agree that. So, you know, and every day's a school day. So they might come to it in the first instance a bit begrudgingly because they got to tick a box for licensing. And actually they come away from it like, do you know what? That was all right. And I did learn a bit. That's pretty cool. And I think maybe we should try some of this stuff, you know?
Well, and I think too, a lot of the, I mean, I grew up in dog breeding, right? Versus you. I grew up with it from when I was a kid. And I think a lot of what many of old school breeders do or no, they know almost by instinct. Like they couldn't put a name to it, but they're already doing some of these things. And so I think that's really useful, is naming and giving them some structure around stuff that they've probably already kind of been doing, but maybe a better way to do it or an understanding of why it works that I think is super useful.
I think the why piece is really important because, like you say, they will be doing some of it, probably not all of it, but they'll be doing some of it. Mm-hmm. And having that extra layer of the reason behind it is, and the reason that I think that that is so important is because they start to share that information with the people that buy the puppies from them.
Yes.
Okay. And that is how we start to see education really taking effect, because the ripples of that knowledge start to move through the breeding community and then into the owners. And that is how we start to see improvements in welfare across the board. And, you know, I think regarding the veterinary repro stuff, you have to be careful. You know, we've got the Veterinary Surgeons Act here. We've got great reproduction vets. I don't sit here purporting to be an expert repro vet. I'm not. Right. We give them lots of opportunity to speak to repro vets because we host the National Dog Breeder Convention on an annual basis. And we have some great guest speakers. We pick topical conversations. We collate information and current papers that have been written, etc. And we give that knowledge and provide the opportunity for our students to have access to that kind of resource. Right. Do I sit here and advise people on, you know, am I happy to say to somebody, well, you know, I think you have to take it to the vet because it needs a C-section or not? Am I happy to sit here and be that person? No, I'm not. I don't think that's ethical or moral. I'm not saying that we don't talk about the veterinary process, you know, that kind of side of things, the reproductive side of things. We do. Do we go into the nitty gritty of if you want to do this or you want to do that, then you should. No, that's reproductive vet.
That's for the vet, right?
Qualified vet. you know, right. we should be doing that. But we do talk about the process that you should go through in terms of selecting dogs for the breeding process, yes. how you're matching dogs, how you break down and understand the health test requirements for your particular breed, where you find that information out, how you should be looking after your pregnant female, mm-hmm. how you should be looking after your stud dogs, how you should be raising your puppies, mm-hmm. you know, what you should be doing with them in terms of socialization, how you match them with owners, how you then link that in to make sure that you are being lawful within the UK, and how that plays mm-hmm. out for you in terms of the operation of running a breeding program, be it small, medium or large. Mm-hmm. And then we're there with that kind of community feel that, you know, no question is a stupid question. Come on, jump into the group, ask, mm-hmm. ask, because there are lots of experienced breeders in that group across all breeds, because that's the other thing. You can't be an expert in every dog breed, mm-hmm. right? And we've created a community of people who have this kind of mindset that they're happy to share their knowledge, they're happy to share their experience. And when there is a newbie to the breed in there, you'll see them all jumping in and going, you okay? You know, anything you need, give us a shout. Or, you know, mm-hmm. we find when this particular breed are whelping, this is what you should be doing. Or, you know, they're really, really community focused, which is lovely. That inspires to do better. We don't have any judgment in the groups. I will not have it.
Yeah.
We won't have that kind of cyberbullying or snobbery around crossbreeds mm-hmm. versus pedigree. Mm-hmm. None of that, not having any of that, because we're here for dog welfare. And unless there is somebody breeding in a way that is really not appropriate and they're not being mindful of health testing and they're not that kind of breeding that we wouldn't stand by, at which right. point there's a conversation to be had, isn't there? It's not that kind of space. It's a safe space.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really important, community. So much as you're talking, I'm thinking, yes, that's a lot of what you're doing, we're doing through Pure Dog Talk, just without a certificate, right? And so I thought such an amazing piece, because it gives people something to strive for, right? Like I have a piece of paper and I just love that. So talk to us a little bit, number one, a little bit of time left, your National Dog Breeder Conference. Is that open to all dog breeders worldwide?
Absolutely. And pet professionals, not just dog breeders, because I think there are lots of people that work with dogs mm-hmm. that need to know about how puppies come into the world and how they should come into the world.
And behavior and husbandry.
Yeah, massive. Oh, that whole piece. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, the Dog Breeder Convention is for if you are interested in puppies, if you are interested in dogs, if you're interested in breeding, if you want to learn more, and you can dip in and out of it. You know, it's a week of stuff. We do it every November. We've got all of the replays are all available. I mean, some great guest speakers, some fantastic information, and that really collaborative thing. But I just want to touch on something that you said about having that certificate. I'm a firm believer that we should be considering dog breeding in the terms of it being a profession, a vocation, a calling, okay? I don't like the word hobby breeder. The word hobby almost insinuates that it's just something I do on the side.
Mm.
Not really something I take seriously, just have a little dabble. Word hobby, something I just, you know, something I enjoy doing on the weekend.
Knitting.
You know, you can't, you know, exactly, crochet, right? So, you know, there's nothing wrong with crochet. I like crochet, but you can pick crochet up and put it down when you feel like it. You can't do that with dogs. And I believe that if you are breeding dogs, you should be doing it with education and knowledge and information behind you.
Intention. I think is one of the things. Like we talk about purpose bred or conservation or blah, 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 all the things. I think you're breeding with intention.
Absolutely.
And to me, that means you're paying attention, right? Like you're not just doing this on a whim. You're doing it intentionally with purpose.
Yeah. This is not a whoopsie litter.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
This is not a whoopsie litter. This is, you have a bitch, you've health tested it, you have paid somebody to use their stud dog, mm-hmm. you're going to raise that litter of puppies and then you're going to sell them. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people are going to give them all away, but let's be honest.
They're not.
You know, the vast majority of dog breeders don't do that, do they?
Yeah.
So, you know, let's be real about it. If you are breeding an animal that has the capability of causing injury to human beings, should you not be doing that with a modicum of knowledge behind you before you do it? Because you can't be an electrician without being qualified. You can't be a car mechanic without being qualified. Why can you just breed dogs?
And I think it's not just that the dogs can cause harm. I mean, that's a thing. But the heartbreak that is encountered by the families. I look at the families where I've done everything right and the dog still pops up with some weird cancer and drops dead at 5. Okay.
Yeah.
That heartbreak is bad enough where I know I've done everything, absolutely everything I can possibly do. And Mother Nature's a bitch and here we are. But the people who are not doing absolutely everything and are not taking into consideration the people's lives that can be ruined, never mind the dog's lives, the people's lives.
Absolutely. And the cost involved, loss of earnings when you've got a dog that's poorly and you're staying at home to look after it, or the stress on your relationship when you've got a dog that is behaving a particular way that is causing problems within your household, the stress on the children when the dog ultimately gets rehomed. Never mind the pain and suffering that the dog's going through.
Yep.
At least the human beings have the opportunity to open their mouth and say something about it. The dogs are the victim in it. And I just don't think that you should be able to, you know, recreate dogs in that way without having had some sort of input so that you know what you're doing when you do it.
Yeah.
Because the stakes are high.
Exactly. I think the stakes being high and culturally, like, just think about our culture, right? Like, from you and I are of an age, right? When I was young, when we started in dogs, people knew about dogs. They knew about basic animal husbandry and they knew about basic stuff. Yeah. We don't live in that world today. We just don't.
And
we need to encourage young people who don't have 50 years of background to start this, and no one will talk to them. And so having a product like what you have, like what Pure Dog Talk is, like, you know, all of these things, you build this system that helps those people know more and do better.
Yeah, completely. And I think at that point, you're raising people up.
Yes.
Rather than putting the dog breeding industry as an industry that has been associated with bad practice, you know, backyard breeding, puppy farming, all of those kind of connotations. You know, if you're breeding dogs, you must be Cruella de Vil.
Yes.
You know, we've all been there. And I don't think that's accurate in any way, shape or form, but I think that that is, you know, how society sees it. I think it's your point around people not having that husbandry knowledge anymore. Dogs have got Instagram accounts.
Yeah.
No dog woke up this morning and thought to itself, damn.
Insta. I got a post on Insta in a sweater.
I got an Instagram account. Oh, God. Plenty of dogs woke up this morning and thought, do you know what? I could really do with a walk. I'd love to go out to the park and have a sniff.
I want to go chase a ball. Or maybe
there's plenty of dogs that woke up and thought that this morning. Yeah. So this is, like you say, the cultural shift.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that savvy, that boots on the ground kind of experience that we perhaps had previously. And I think that we need to make knowledge and information accessible for people. And I think we need to keep it real for the animals because, you know, they don't want to be dressed up in coats and being put in handbags.
Well, okay, I've known a few that thought it was funny. I mean, like, I'm going to be honest. I've known a few dogs that thought that was funny. I've also known a few that were horrified.
Mortified. Yeah, we put some, like, little reindeer horns on the dogs for the Christmas picture. Like, you know, they both looked at me.
My 4-pound chihuahua giving me a death glare because I put her in a coat because it was cold. She's like,
how very dare you? You are going to lose a digit. Dog,
yes, I'm going to pee in your shoe, guaranteed.
Haven't we lost the we love dogs because they're canine, not human? This is probably transgressed into a different podcast, but
it's right.
They're not treated as wonderful dogs. They're wonderful as a canine, not as a human. And when we forget that piece, we forget their needs.
And we forget their nature and we set them up to fail.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. And then the circle goes round and round and round and round and round. And so we need to be making sure that the breeders know what they're doing, why they're doing it, and the impact of not doing it.
And sharing that knowledge with their buyers.
Absolutely. That message needs to be moved over into the space of the buyer who are super excited and making an emotional, emotive decision based on the cutest little puppy that they ever did see. And they're going to take this puppy home and it's going to be wonderful and it's going to be this and it's going to be. And the reality is it's going to be early mornings. It's going to be pooping on the kitchen floor. It's going to be nibbling kids' ankles because that's what puppies do. You know, welcome to the real world. But nobody told them that, did they?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that knowledge and that experience, that firsthand experience, getting out there, keeping it real. I know that's a statement that a lot of people sort of wince at, but being real and having real conversations about what being a breeder looks like, what raising a litter of puppies looks like, and then, you know, what it looks like to actually be a dog owner, because it's not glossy pictures on Instagram.
No, it is not. Responsible dog ownership. AKC even has a day for responsible dog ownership. I'd like them to make it even more.
Absolutely. Because, you could fill a week.
Yes, you could. All right. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much. I know it's late there in the UK, and I appreciate you staying up and talking to us. And listeners, Bolo, be on the lookout. I think you'll see some stuff that we're going to try and get accomplished with Rebecca. So.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I can't wait. Thank you for having me.
All right, you guys. I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, you know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.